Yeah. Yeah. Stony, stony, stony. Man, yeah. Don't know you, no, baby. Still feel it for you like you feel it for me. How you been doing, son? Yeah. Come back hard again. Me soja be your side, your smith, yeah. All you ever ask, why me can't see you? Me Saint Elizabeth say, I will not visit you. She know I'm on tour, but still take it as a disrespect. Miss Portland, yeah, she leave her son. She don't have a man already, but she want it done, man. Me Saint Catherine, no nobody yatter than you. Body no beat up after that is why I'm flattering. Miss Trelawney, she never can stay. Now that is what I really call a runaway day. Montego Bay, I for check you one of them day. But this camera, them I move like some runaway slave. Miss Matt DeVoe, I can't stand the boo. But I guess the way you act is understandable. Feel like Freddie McGregor, I thought we was rocking steady. Just link me when you're ready, cause you're pretty but you're petty. Ooh. This goes out to each and everyone. The love doctor come back for give you the medicine. So anytime I'm stressing, you just come up on my cellular. You know you will never be disappointed.
Alright, welcome everybody to the next episode of the Lest We Forget podcast, historical podcast by Tenamentian Media. If you want to stay in tune with everything that we're up to doing, you can check out our Instagram page at Tenamentian Media. And our Twitter at Tenement Yard_. Yeah. Yeah, Tenement Yard_. So yeah, welcome. It's been a while. It's been a month since our last episode. But you know, there's a reason for that. We usually drop episodes every 2 weeks. There's a whole reason why it took us a month, you know, to get back in the groove. And it's a really long story. I'm going to need a long introduction from me. So I'm not even like about going at the story. Just know, say it's funny. And a lot of laughter. And yeah, it's just too long. So we're not even going at that. But glad you're here. And we're going to have another episode about Jamaica history, about Caribbean history for you. So, you know, to all listeners, welcome back. To new listeners, welcome. Just know we're very unconventional. Well, I am. So a lot of words are going to be mispronounced. So memory lapse is going to happen. But you're going to learn. You know, you're going to learn. You're going to relearn. And we're going to have a good time in the time that you're here. You understand? So this episode is entitled Sidney Breakspear. I don't even know if I said the name pronounced. Sidney Breakspear, Michael Manley, and apartheid. You understand? And we're just going to jump right into the episode. We're going to talk about the episode real quick. You understand? Before I even send it too tough, I will just like to say this before I even start the episode. By the end of the episode, you're going to like question whether person's here was right or the person's here was wrong. Everybody have their own opinion, and that's what we do. We just present the facts to you, and you make up your own opinions on things. But at some point, you're going to hear me and my unsolicited. That's definitely not a word. I'm going to say some things that I'm really not supposed to be saying, because it's just my opinion. But I'm given 3 rants per episode. So yeah, you're going to hear them rant there throughout the episode. And that's basically it. And before we even jump into the episode, let me just list the sources. We have a project working on very soon, where all the sources that you guys have been asking for, that everybody have been asking for a while now, we have a project dropping. So we're in a surf boat it, because I've seen the complaints. So yeah, every email when they send me and complain about, I usually see them and I'm like, ah, cool. So the team are working on them, they're working on them. So yeah, but the sources of this episode, a lot of Gleaner articles, a couple of stuff from The Observer, an article from Non-Fanfare, a couple of stuff from History Channel, Michael Manley biography by Godfrey Smith. There are a few clippings from the Parliamentary Library. And there is also data from you by the data from the book You Share by Hartley Nita. A listener actually got us this book. Well, he got me the book. And sir, big up yourself. I really do appreciate the book. So just know. I told you before about that. No. I finally finished it and it's really a good read. I mean, Hartley Nita is one of like Jamaica's most like profound recorders of history. So you know, just to have a chance to read his writings is like really cool. So like, special thanks to you for that. But yeah, those are the sources. We're gonna jump into the episode. So yeah, Cine Breakspear, Michael Manley and Apartheid. But no, if you don't know about the story, it makes no sense. You understand, like, what do those three people have in common? Like, those three nouns? That sounds way too academic, but that may I go with. Those three nouns have in common. Maybe two of them have things in common. But, what you know, what's the story? So we're just going to jump into the story. We're going to tell the story. Yeah. So, first thing to know, you know, we're going to talk about Cindy Breakspear for persons who don't know her. We're going to give you a brief overview of her, right? So, Cindy Breakspear, and I'm reading, so just get ready for some words get butchered. So, Cindy Breakspear was born on October 24th, 1954. So, Miss Breakspear, if you're listening to this, wait, she's married, right? Mrs. Breakspear, if you're listening to this, I have this habit of not calling married woman Mrs. and it's, I swear, yeah, but happy belated birthday to you if you're listening, but we'll continue. So she was born on October 24, 1954 in Toronto, Canada. Actually, she was born in Canada to a Jamaican father, Louis Breakspear, and this man was British Jamaican, so I'm white. And she was also, and her mother was a white Canadian woman of British origin. Her mother name Margaret. Can I pronounce that word? What is? Her last name is Cochrane. Yeah, that's her name. Cochrane. That's her mother's name. She has three brothers and one sister. And Breakspear ended up moving to Jamaica when she was 4 years old, and attended the Immaculate Conception High School. Understand where she graduated in 1973. For persons who don't know, IMAC is an all-girls institution. I think at the time they were boarding. They're in the 70s, they were boarding, I believe. So, my little back history of the school. Yeah, they were boarding, so she attended a boarding school. At school, Sydney Breakspear was, you know, very rebellious. You know, she was very rebellious in nature. And that ended up in her not attending her graduation ceremony. Alright, so yeah, very rebellious. So, as a teenager, Breakspear participated in beauty pageants. That was so we really get into like her story with pageants, because most Jamaicans either know her for three things: the Miss World, Bob Marley, and Junior Gang. Legit, that's literally what she knew her for. And then you have other persons who know the political side. If you follow politics, you know why. Yeah, but we'll move. So as a teenager, Breakspear participated in beauty pageants, including, right, Miss Jamaica Body Beautiful, which she ended up winning. Right, so she ended up winning that. And one of the prize for that was a trip to England. And the trip to England was to take part in Miss Universe Bikini, which she also won. So please to understand that, yo, So, I'm going to be honest, I don't really understand the pageant world. You don't understand my kind of thing that. I entered a pageant once when I was 9 or 10. I think I was 9. I entered a pageant. You know, my primary school, I wanted to be like Miss. Yeah. And I entered a pageant and the lady said, she just don't feel like for me, I don't have the look. I'm still upset with that woman there. Like, me feel like I have the look. Like, I don't. Well, you know what? We'll move. I don't really understand the budget world to all that. I don't really tune into it. From that very bad experience with that woman there. But anyway, I see her. I just like look in her face. I just want to see her. I see her and she see me. I just want to know. So, yeah. I don't really call her name. But, lady, if you are listening, I'm me. Davy, yeah. I still remember. I still have you up. Yeah. But, those competitions around those times was very much like bodybuilding wise, like body. It wasn't much more, it wasn't about like personality and whatever goes into being a beauty queen. It was much more bodybuilding. So those two competitions that you enter was Body Beautiful and Miss Universe Bikini was very much bodybuilding. Alright? So she ended up winning Miss Universe Bikini. And after the contest, the late Asuka, the late Asuka Heidenstam, right, who is considered the father of British bodybuilding, suggested to the Spartan owner at the time that Britney Spears should enter Miss World pageant. Now, the Spartan owner, right, was Mikey Horton James, and I strongly believe he's still, he's the managing director of the club, Spartan Hill Club, the Spartan Hill Club that most Jamaicans know. Asuka referred, you know, Sydney to Mikey, right? And it was like, yo, she need for enter Miss World, you understand? And please understand that this was like 75. Around that time, Sydney Breakspear was known in Jamaica because she was having a very public relationship with, you know, reggae superstar Bob Marley. You understand? No, Sydney Breakspear said, I don't know if you watch any Bob Marley documentary, but Sydney Breakspear is always in there. Like, she's always in there, and she tells the story of how she never knew that Bob Marley was married. Which may not even know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Because Rita, that's what I'm going to do with my personal life, but it's still bizarre to me. First round, yes, this is going to be my first round. Rita Marley is, for persons who don't know, was Bob Marley's Cuban Jamaican wife. Yeah, she was born in Cuba, so Cuban Jamaican. I'm going to use her both hyphens. Yeah, so it's Cuban Jamaican wife who he married, and apparently, all majority, if not all, of Bob Marley mistresses have said that yo, like, she wasn't treated like a, never treated like a wife. You understand? So when Cindy say, yo, she never knows about Marley did married, you kind of have to believe her. Rita Marley had a book, A No Woman No Cry. Yeah, I think that's the name of it, No Woman No Cry, when she went into details about her relationship with Bob Marley. It was very, that book was a lot. It was really a lot. That woman went through a lot. Hope she's in a happy place right now. But yeah, she went through a lot. So yeah, Sydney Breakspear was having a very public relationship with Bob Marley. Sydney was like 20, 21 at the time, and Bob Marley was like 30, 31, 32. No, Bob Marley was like 30. Like in that late 30 around them time there. So she was having that relationship with him. And you don't know, there's the story of how Turn Your Lights Down Low was written for her. She was the inspiration, because apparently Bob Marley would have, like, when he want to come over a yard, turning down the light was like a signal, say him could have come over. Like, Bob Marley, no matter how great he is a cisgender heterosexual man, and with that comes a whole lot of problems with loving a cisgender heterosexual man. So yes, but yeah, so that was Sydney Breakspear. And that was legit how she was thrust into the world of entering Miss World, right? And she was, like, she was a good prospect of winning Miss World, because Jamaica has had a great history in the Miss World pageant, right? So the Miss World pageant, just a little brief history here, was started in 1951, right? And Jamaica has been sending representatives since 1959, starting with Sheila McTilde Chong. Not Chong, yeah, that's C-H-O-N-G. I don't know, put yourself, that may I pronounce. Right? White lady. Yeah. And then the entrant in 1962 was Chris Leon. Alright, let me not say the lady white. She light skin. Because to be honest with you, like, races, I'm confused with races most times. So let me just say the lady light skin. Because me don't know if, yeah, So the entrant in 1962 was Chris Leon. Although Marlene Murray was crowned Miss Jamaica, and Chris Leon ended up placing among the top 15 finalists in the 1962 competition. And then I don't know, in 1963, you don't know, Jamaica won its first Miss World title when Carol Joan Crawford, she ended up winning. And also, she has the distinction of being the first black woman to win the pageant. You see me? So anyway, Jamaica, go, you don't know, so we stamp history. We just over there, kill them. Bloop, bloop, bloop. Yeah. So yeah. And then after the years, after the years, Erica Jean Cook, she plays sixth. In 1971, Ava Joy Gill, she plays fifth. And in 1973, Patricia Patsy won, she plays third. So I mean, Sydney could have win. She could have, like, Sydney could have win. Like, when Oscar made the recommendation to Mikey that, yo, she entered, it was a good prospect, because Jamaica has been doing well in the competition. You understand? Like, with that start, be sure from long time. You understand? So Sydney was, you know, a good prospect. But yeah, the problem, there was a huge problem happening, because Manley, you understand, Michael Manley was prime minister. Now, talk about this now. So Michael Manley came to power in 1972. Let me hope and speed this up. So Michael Manley came to power in 1972. I never talk about that money, honestly. Like, really and truly, I never talk about this. So he came to power in 1972, right? And if you go back and listen to a Clark's episode, remember a lot of things were being banned during that time. Clark's was banned in Jamaica in 1972 by Michael Manley. You understand? It's still celebratory Clark's, you know, every politician actually, yeah, it was banned by Michael Manley. You guys can go ahead and listen to our episode on Clark's at some point in a season, when I either episode 7 or 8, yeah, I don't remember. But you can go ahead and listen to that episode. We'll go in full details about that, about Clark's and how Clark's made its rise to Jamaica. You can listen to that. So yeah, but Manley never also banned Clark's. You understand? Manley never banned other things. You understand? No. One of the reasons was that Manley was a socialist. But let's get this straight. PMP is a socialist party, right? PMP was founded on socialist ideas. OT, Faircloth, who is like the, I know I'm whispering, I always say Faircloth, and then sometimes I say Faircloth, and I do. OT, right, who is the instigator of the PMP party, he was a socialist. And then the other founding fathers of PMP, Norman Manley, Nether Soul, Cliff, like, all of them people, they were socialists, you understand? So it's like, socialism was always there. So it's like, the socialism was there, and Michael Manley was taking it up off of the shelf. You understand? You understand? So, during that time, under the Manley regime, as many Jamaicans know, Jamaica became, like, really close with Cuba. Now, let's get this straight. Jamaica and Cuba did early relationship. You know, like, when you're in a classroom, and, like, you're the person, a classmate, you understand? But you don't really talk, but in a classmate. You understand? That was Jamaica relationship pre-Michael Manley. You understand? Like, in the club. This is when Michael Manley, like, in 1972, come now, when Michael Manley become PM, is like a start copy after that classmate. You understand? You're a classmate, they're a friend. You understand? They might help you with the homework. You understand? They might help you with the project. You understand? When you're back at the class, like, ki-ki-ki-ki-ki. Yeah. That was Jamaica and Cuba relationship with Manley. You understand? So, So, basically, get that, right? And Castro and Manley became close friends. Like, Michael would go on Castro plane, and they would go off at places in the world and have them conversations and stuff. And Michael legit look up to Castro, even though wait, one is older than another. No. He did look up to him, right? And one of the things to understand was that Castro was a globalist, you understand? There's a separate from his leftist politics, he was a globalist. He think big picture, and he think in the advancement of third world countries, the advancement of the developing world, and definitely the advancement of black people. Understand? And you understand? And around that time, there was three countries where, in the 70s, there were three countries where systematic racism was start. You understand? So you have Brazil, who was racism, like, it's there, it exists, but it's like people don't acknowledge it. Not even Brazil alone, but just South America racism was just, it's just, oh my lord. Like, as a football fan, right? It's something I always observe, and I have to ask somebody about it if I'm the only person to realize it. But for persons who watch football, like, do you know any black Argentine footballer? Like, be honest with yourself now. Like, do you have you, not even black mixed race? Like, them have an inter-black in them. No, you don't know any. Because honestly, God, black people don't live in Argentina. It's that bad. Like, apparently around the 1800s, their leader at the time put all the black persons in the country at the front of the battle and they got killed. So, them black population is less than like 1%. Like, but honestly, if you are a football fan and you know one black Argentine footballer, let me know wherever it exists. Please let me know because I honestly God, don't know one. I know countries, I judge countries by their alright, let me not say that on here. Let me not say that. Keep that to myself. I'm literally looking at me right now. I'm like, yeah, keep that to myself. But yeah, like, preach, right? So yeah, Brazil, specifically South America, really, racism is there. But specifically Brazil, it's very starved, you understand? And black people and indigenous people, especially those of the Amazonians, are really at the bottom of the barrel. Like, being black in Brazil is like an insult, you understand? Like, especially now when they are run by a fascist leader. So, yeah, I could understand where they were during the 1970s, you understand? And just to say this, like, when it comes to the discussion of slavery, we need to include Brazil a bit more because as a singular country, majority of the enslaved people, 40 to 45%, depending on, is usually 40 to 45% depending on the text that you're reading. Some people are 42, some people are 43, but usually 40 to 45% of enslaved people coming from Africa went to Brazil. As a singular country, not a region, as a singular country, majority of the enslaved people from the continent went to Brazil. Understand? And when it comes to the Berlin Conference of 84, 85, but it finished in 85. And the Berlin Conference is when the European powers divided up Africa and just take peace. Portugal is never mentioned. Like, Portugal was horrible. Because legit, Brazil, Angola, and Mozambique legit built Portugal. Like, Portugal is on their back. Like, they built that country, literally. You understand? Because Portugal really and truly don't have that much natural resources to even thrive the way they are. Europe really don't have none, honestly. So, like, you know? And it's really sad. It's really unfortunate, honestly. Like, yeah. So that's Brazil. In the 70s, and there was the US, who I don't even have to go into. Let me just say, even though Portugal was there, the saddest part of the Berlin Conference was Congo. Congo went to Belgium, that was the only country they took. And then we all know about Belgium and what happened to Belgium. We all know about Belgium and Congo, we all know what happened there. One of the worst, absolutely one of the worst genocides in human history that occurred. So that was the worst thing that came out of the Berlin Conference. Like, everything that came out of the Berlin Conference was bad, 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 horrible. But that singular moment of Belgium is took the cake. But yeah, so you have then you have the US. And the US racism, we're not going into details about that. Like, we live in the Western Hemisphere. If you're not living in the Western Hemisphere, if you live in the world, you know about US racism, especially in the 60s and 70s, and the fact that, you know, the rise of the Black Panther Party there. Yeah, so we all know this. So we're not going into details about the US and film racism. And Castro, it wasn't that Castro was speaking about the US racism, he just condemned it, but I mean, anytime like black leaders in the States got themselves in trouble with the law, whether deliberate or they were being framed by the FBI, alleged, because, you know, they would always go to Cuba. You understand? It was like a safe haven for them because they don't know. You couldn't extradite them to back to the States. So you have Huey P. Newton, who's the founder of the Black Panther Party, when he came out of prison and then went back to prison. Yeah, he ended up going to Cuba for a while before he came back. He went into prison. Came out. You know, it's not important. Just know the same thing that Cuba at one point after him come out in a prison during the period when he made Elaine Brown the first woman chairman of Black Panther Party. So, yeah. And then you had Asata Shakur, You don't know Danna this. Big up Asata. If you haven't read her biography, you need to. Big up. Big up, big up, Asata Shaker. Hope she's having a great day. You know, I drink some, I don't know what, whatever she drink some pina colada. Enjoy herself in a Cuba right now. She end up fleeing to Cuba. So, you know, Cuba's always been that experience for people. And then the other country during the 70s who was going through another systematic racism was South Africa. Understand? South Africa was under the apartheid system. I know all over the place because we talk about Miss World. But this is important. You understand? So I'm going to go through everybody for you. You understand? Explain the key players. Right? So the apartheid system in South Africa was this racial segregation of the racial segregation and white supremacy that occurred in the country, right? And if you speak to any black South African, they will tell you that, yo, yes, we got independence in 1910, but we, as a black person, I got liberated in the 1990s. Understand liberation in the sense that, yo, I am recognized as a human being in the country of my birth. Understand? So that, yeah, South Africans are actually really cool people to speak to. Honestly, like, one of my closest friends is South African, and having conversation with him is just like, wow, mind-blowing. It's really... Yeah, their experience with race is really something that I think everybody deserves to just listen and study. It's amazing. The things that they went through and the fact that they survived it. I mean, I don't glamorize struggle, but you really see the strength and courage of people, of South African people, like, feeling things different. Like, oh my word. So, yeah. And the apartheid came about in 1948, right? When the ANP, that's the Afrikaner National Party, won the general election. And you know, like how every party have a slogan when they're running for election? The ANP, their slogan was apartheid. And apartheid means apartness. Apartheid, apartness, 1 + 1 = 2. What me a third eye right there, right? And the goal, like, they ran on a mandate that for South Africa to develop, for South Africa to strive, you have to separate the white minority from the non-white majority, right? Like, that's basically for them thing. Like, that's what they did. And it's funny enough, they copied this system, the apartheid system that the ANP copied was from the US Jim Crow system. Understand? That's legit what they went to. They would send, like, legit. And that's the basis that they created. So during that era, what it was that the blacks were at the bottom. You understand? You would have the East Indians, those are the Indians and the Pakistans, because South Africa has a large population of persons of that descent there. They would be in the middle, and then you'd have the white people at the top. I understand? The British people, because South Africa was British colonized. Again, Berlin Conference. But we'll move. Alright? So yeah, that was basically what it was. And what made it even worse was they wanted to separate the black people from each other as well. So they wanted to put them together, because if you pick black people to get, like, if you put them to fight against each other, then all you have to do is stand back and don't do nothing. You understand? Because they're legit creating hate that's not supposed to be there. And it's just like, why? It's like, you know, in a sense, because, like, all of you are pressed together, like, I'm also as black, like, all of you are pressed together, like, why we are fighting against each other. But how they did it, how the government did it, or the white government did it, was that they did it through languages. So South Africa has 11 official languages, and majority of that is based upon the tribal communities in the country. So what they did was that they separate, like, what the language that you could learn. So if you're Tosa, you couldn't learn Zulu. You understand? The other way around. So if you divide people by language, them can't communicate with each other. So, and it was just so sickening, like, absolutely sickening. My friend, he grew up in a household where it was mandated that he learn all 11 official languages, because his father grew up under apartheid. He didn't want him to not communicate with fellow black people in his country. So he had to learn all the tribal languages. Like, it was, it's a thing for him. You understand? So, yeah, he just did bad. He did really bad. You understand? There's this TV show, Usual Compound on TVJ. Abby, what did you know that show? The Usual Compound TV. I see him. You know, sure, man. We usually come on panty. And a generation. Me no generations. No. We no generations. I look back at my hand every Sunday, 2 to 5. That was the only thing that was good on Sundays besides Profile. But no, not that. It was the show that always come like during Blackie's Sarafina. The one, you know, like people who watch local television back in Jamaica, like, you know, that every Black History Month TVJ would have showed the same show, Sarafina with Whoopi Goldberg, you understand? And the local pit of them, freedom is coming tomorrow. Like, I know that song. I think Arden did the thing altogether sing too. Just things off the top of my head look like legit. That's a great show. Whoopi is in it, and she was like, she had the gun and they end up killing her. And for people who know Doja Cat, her father is in it. He was one of Sarafina. I think he was Sarafina love interest, or them did they, or them did like each other something. But in there, they will ask him, oh, know that valuable piece of information. But I know that's Doja Cat father. But go watch the show. It's a great show, wonderful show. Yeah, so that show explores the apartheid system in South Africa, right? Whoa, we went way ahead, right? We went so real quick. So, one of the other things that came out of that was that back in 1950, the government started to ban marriages between whites and other people of races. And if you were seen to having, if a black person, a white person was having sex in the country, you were mandated to be locked up. Like, you could serve a whole lot of time in that country. You understand? And I'm saying before, they were dividing up people. So you had, what is it called? The black people were Bantu. Then you had the colored mixed race. The colored was the mixed race. And then you had the white people. And then, as I said before, you had persons of East Indian descent, the Asians, the Indians, and Pakistani. They were, yeah, they were also there. So it was just really bad. Like, literally in their constitution, you could have, like, oh, the white mother, colored children. Like, it was legit that bad. And that was when they really saw the rise of leaders, you know, Nelson Mandela, Winnie, persons of that nature. That was when they really saw, you know, the opposition came to apartheid. But yeah, to explore that more, if you're not like a watcher of TV, no, you know what? If you want to learn more about that, like the whole sex and marriage and how that the legislation work, and is an easy read. It's probably one of the easiest biographies I've read. Born a Crime by Trevor Noah. His mother was black and his father was from the Netherlands. He was literally born a crime. And there's a scene in it where he was in a taxi and the taxi man realized his mother because he was colored. And if you know Trevor Noah, the host of Daily Show from Comedy Central, he's light skin and his mother is like black. He was in a taxi and the taxi driver realized that his mother was his mother because she usually acts as his maid. So she don't get arrested in public, so she don't get locked up in public because Trevor Noah was legit a crime. And when the taxi driver realized he was trying to kill them, and his mother had to like throw him out of the car, and she had to throw herself out of the car, and they rolled down a hill. Like, listen to me, read the book. It's a great book. Honestly, it's one of the easiest reads I've read that really explore the apartheid system in South Africa. But definitely when it comes to the legislation that the racists couldn't be with each other. Like, interracial relationships was a crime, right? So you can read that. That's my suggestion. How much today? 30? Alright, cool. Alright, so yeah. Now, another thing that happened during that time was the 1976 Soweto uprising. And what basically happened was that there was this town, Soweto. It's on the outskirts of Johannesburg. And Johannesburg is South Africa has two capitals. There's Johannesburg and there's Cape Town. One is the official and one is the legislative. Judicial and legislative. That's how it go. Yeah, I think that's how them go. Johannesburg is the black. Cape Town, there'll be red people. Literally, Cape Town is a lot of white people. People will be amazed. Like, amazed. if you go like what? But yeah, so Sowetan is outside of Johannesburg, and Johannesburg is like in the interior of the country, right? And what happened was that there's a school there, and they mandated that all the Black African children had to learn against the African language requirement, where they had to learn it. And the African is the language that's spoken by white South Africans, right? That's the language that white South Africans speak. It's like an intermix of English and Dutch. Yeah, it's kind of bizarre. And they had to learn it, but like they couldn't learn their own language. Like, they couldn't speak their own tongue, like their tribal tongue. As I said before, if you separate people by their language, then you literally, you know, oppress them more, but also pit them towards each other, and putting them so they're not going to take it. And what they did was start this demonstration. They literally started a demonstration in June of 76, and the white police officers came and they opened fire and tear gas the children. A lot of bullets were sprayed. Sarafina is inspired by that incident. As I said before, go watch the show. It's a great show. You can't watch a TVJ, I go show it. Black History Month, just wait until February, come, I know them always show it, yeah. And that legit happened, you know, that was 76, and it was just a bloodbath that happened, and it grew protests and government crackdown from a lot of places. Winnie Mandela became very outspoken about that, and then the UN Security Council come up and say something. But a UN Security Council, like, honestly, like, them just did it. Literally, them literally just did it. Like, I really don't see them purpose most times. Honestly. But yeah. And that happened. Understand? And a lot of countries was against it, but they didn't do anything about it. Cuba, no. Had a very strong stance against it. You understand? Castro had a very strong stance about it. And Castro was early in South Africa because we're going to talk about this later. During the Angolan thing, where there was, the US was backing the South African apartheid army for off going in Angola, right? And telling the black people in them countries, they cannot fight for the liberation of freedom country, right? And the US was backing them, like lending arms and stuff like that and training, while Castro decided that, yo, the black people in Angola deserve a right in their own country, and he was assisting the Angolians, the native Angolians, in their fight. So, you know, that was, as I said before, Castro was all over the place. You understand? He was literally all for the liberation of blacks, you know, especially in African continent. And there was this newspaper, this famous newspaper that says Black Africa is riding the crest of a wave generated by the Cuban victory in Angola. You understand? Because that incident, that Angolan war, created a slippery slope of events where you saw Zimbabwe, that led to Zimbabwe and their uprising that led to their independence in 1980. And yeah, South Africa realizing, blacks in South Africa realizing that, yo, this needs to stop now, and they became very much more radical and defensive in their liberation. A lot of other Southern Africa countries also was inspired by that. So yeah, you know, Castro is well loved over there. So back to the original story now, you understand, of Manly and Manly's stance and how Manly reached that story. Manly, as I said before, was great friends with Cuba. Understand? And Manly decided, as I say, yo, he might take up a stance against apartheid. And this is why Manly is so loved all over the world, because of his stance on apartheid, right? But let me just make this clear, because nobody now come attack me. Like, Jamaica's always had a strong stance when it comes to the anti-apartheid movement. Like, this didn't start with Manly. Manly just took a very radical step, but it never started with Manly. It started with another Manly. It started with Norman Manly. Norman Manly was the first prime minister. Let me not say prime minister. Premier? First head of government to take a stance against apartheid, right? Because remember I said apartheid started in 1948. And legislation was brought into place in the 50s, like, put in writing in the 50s, in the 1950, and but no, in 1957, yeah, Jamaica became the second country in the world after India to declare an embargo against South Africa. It's 1957. Jamaica became the second country to put a travel embargo on South Africa. Like, and that was really between Norman Manley and our Minister of Foreign Trade at the time, who was Wilzo Isaacs. So both of them were working coordination that, yo, we just can cut off contact with South Africa until them actually get rid of this apartheid system. All right. So Jamaica stand started with Norman Manley, not Michael. Understand? There was also Ushera. Ushera, no. If you guys want to hear more about Ushera, please go ahead and check out our episode before this. We spoke about Walter Rodney. Please go ahead and listen to that. We don't really want to talk about that man here, if we're being so honest. But you guys can go ahead and listen to our last episode about Walter Rodney, and Ushera is brought up in that. But Ushera, when he was Minister of Foreign Affairs, back in 1963, he made a declaration at the International Year of Human Rights, pleading for the removal of the apartheid system in South Africa. So we have had head of governments before Michael Manley who have taken a stance against apartheid. But this is what happened with Michael Manley, right? And this is how Michael Manley did this thing. Now, at every chance Michael Manley got to speak on a global stage, he mentioned the apartheid system. And this was supported by Dudley Thompson, who was... Dudley Thompson... Go back and listen to our Tivoli Gardens episode, and you hear us talk a lot about Dudley Thompson. Dudley Thompson was a PMP. He was in PMP. He actually ran against Edward Siaga. He's still today the only PMP candidate who have even had a slight chance to win Tivoli Gardens back in the 1967 election. I'm just going to go for him. 1967 election. He's still the closest PMP person to ever beat Edward Siaga in that election. And that election, that event surrounding Dudley Thompson and Siaga really birthed the gang wars in Tivoli Garden. So you can go ahead and listen to that episode. You know? One of them, season one, coming out through Dudley Thompson. And then it was the anti-apartheid movement under Manley was also supported by PJ Patterson, who was our deputy prime minister at the time. You understand? Soon we'll talk about PJ again. So as I said before, Manley, he was just the voice of like third world country, developing country, alongside Castro, you understand, and they might take some very strong stance against the apartheid system. So there are major speeches that he did in Maputo, copied it in Jamaica, and then his famous UN, the famous one he did at the UN headquarters, calling for the apartheid system to be stopped in South Africa. And then there's also the incident that occurred between Jesus. You know, sometimes you don't want to call people name, but it's like the name after call, and you just have to hold it. Alright. Am I going to get myself in trouble? No, I don't think so. If you have ever read Inside the CIA Secret War in Jamaica by what's your name? Cassie McCalla. If you have ever read that book, there is a portion that tells a conversation that about what really happened that led to Jamaica, like, financial wounds, whatever, W-O-U-N-D-S, whatever that pronounce, in the 1970s, right? So, can read that book. It's very fiction-ish. It's a very dramatization of events, really, but it reads like a fiction, but it's interesting. Or you can read Struggle in the Periphery by Michael Manley. He goes into details about really what happened in that book. Yeah. So, but what happened was that the United States Secretary of State, Henry Kissinger, right, at the time, he told Manley that, yo, Cuba, he's having a presence in Angola and fighting against the apartheid system in South Africa, which we, the US, are backing. Like, I'm going to need you, Manley, understand, to not commit Jamaica to opposing Cuba. Like, you are going to say, understand, that we in the US are doing the correct thing, right, by backing the apartheid system in South Africa. That's what you're going to say. And Molly was like, no, we're not doing that. You understand? No, we're not doing that. That is never going to happen. And Manley ended up backing Cuba. You understand? He ended up backing Cuba because what the US was to paint Castro and Cuba in this bad light, that the apartheid system in the US was something good. In the South Africa was something good. You understand? The same way them try to tell people that the Jim Crow was good, apartheid system is good. And they were just not having it. Manley was like, no, me not do it, it not gonna happen. And it so happened that Manley went out and he spoke out against the apartheid system and back Castro in his stance in Angola. PJ and Dudley Thompson also, you know, came out and said the same thing, and they also influenced other nations in the Caribbean and across the world to endorse Cuba's campaign in Angola. The problem, what happened with Manley doing that, is what led to the it's debatable. You understand? Because you had the oil crisis of the 70s and you had the mismanagement of funds in the 70s as well under the PMP regime. But that incident is one of the factors that led to what happened, led to our economic instability in the 70s, where what happened was that when Manley decided that he was not going to stand up with Cuba, he was going to stand up against the US, America punished him, you understand? But not him, they punished Jamaica by withholding a line of credit funds that was being negotiated at the time, understand? And when the US cut that funding, when the US like blacklisted them and cut all these creditors and went on this campaign of painting Jamaica in a bad light because of the whole apartheid Cuba-Angola thing, Jamaica suffered for that. And that led to our economic... That was one of the reasons that led to our economic instability of that period. Whew. Yes. So, we reached this now. You understand? But Manley still went out and he was still being a voice of anti-apartheid movement in South Africa. And he was very relentless in his efforts, and that bear fruit in the fact that in a couple of years after, South Africa, the apartheid government of South Africa was removed from the Commonwealth and also the UN. And then Manley had this thing where he started his Jamaican scholarship thing. I think it was him. Yeah, the Jamaican scholarship thing where South Africans could come to Jamaica fully funded and they will learn in Jamaica. The same thing that started with Castro and Manley, where Jamaican doctors and dentists and veterinarians could go to Cuba and study, you know, an exchange program. Jamaica had that with South Africa, black South Africans specifically, where they could come to Jamaica and learn and XYZ. Because I said before, they were outcasted in their own country, so Jamaica provided that for them. So, you know? Yeah. All right, we'll continue now. So, how Sydney reaching at all of this apartheid? Like, how was she reaching at this? Because we'll move all over the place. So, what happened to you, Miss World, now, was that South Africa decided to send a black and a white delegate to Miss World. So they were sending two persons. Miss World constitution is that you send, each country is allowed to send one person. But the way the apartheid movement set up is like, oh, it's two different countries. You understand? So they're going to send, so even though the black person is supposed to go, no, we're going to send a white person. You understand? Because, yeah, No, the apartheid system was so sickening. But this wasn't the first time that South Africa was doing it. South Africa did it back in 1970, in the 1970 competition, which was held in London, UK, where they also sent one black and one white person. Jamaica never really ever started. Who was in power at that time? That was 1970. Usher. figures. Yeah, Jamaica never objected to that. So Jamaican contestants went, blah, blah, blah. Not into that. But during the 1970 thing, there was a protest by the women's liberation activists, and flour was thrown, and the host was assaulted, and a bag of things happened. But also what happened in that year was that Miss Grenada won. Her name is Jennifer Houston. But yes, you know, she win. But we'll get a piece of joke. One of the judges who was part of the 1970 contest was Sir Eric Geary. Yes, Sir Eric Geary, the Prime Minister of Grenada. He was another judge then. And Miss Grenada win. I'm not saying anything happening, you know, in the fall play. I ain't saying it. I'm just saying it's very chuckleable. You know, it's a laughable moment in time in history. But that's where it go. We move, we continue. Right? So now, when they did it in 1976, South Africa decided to send two persons to it. Understand? As well as the as well as the Soweto incident that happened in 1976. Understand? You understand? Coming with them, all these grand plans to Sydney go and Sydney represent Jamaica. No? All these grand plans. Man, they said, no, we're not going. We are withdrawing from it in protest, and Cuba did the same thing. There were 9 countries that withdrew because the South African Non-Racial Olympic Committee did have a whole boycott. You know, they started boycott and countries supported the boycott. Jamaica was on, Cuba was on. Man, they said, no, we're not doing it. We're not doing it because this is just feeding to the apartheid discrimination. We going is basically saying that, yo, we accept what is going on in the country. We're not going. No, it not happen. So we are standing in solidarity with the black South Africans. No. Members of Sydney have these grand plans, you know, but Sydney was like, nah. And she did an interview recently when she said, she said she never did a watch it. Like, I'm not gonna quote the woman. I actually do not remember what exact words that she said. But basically what she was saying is that she was so laser focused on being Miss World. Like, she just never did a message. She saw her opportunity, and this is her opportunity of a lifetime. She was going to take it. Basically. Something like that, to that extent. But probably wrong, but allegedly, that she said. Something to that extent, she said. Understand? Which I mean, boy, I mean, I don't know. She was 22, 21 at the time. Like, I don't understand her psyche. I don't understand her psyche. For me personally, you decide what you will do in that incident. Understand? But she was very adamant that, yo, she was going to go. You understand? But this is the thing. You cannot go and represent yourself. You have to go and represent the country. You have to wear the sash of the country. Understand? You have to get approval from the country to go. Understand? So that was when the whole Manly thing came in. And him dead stamp say him not sending a representative. Jamaica is not sending a representative. And they found a loophole. I don't know. We tried finding out the terms and agreements of what what happened and what was the conversation about. Still up in the air. But it was between Oscar Hayden, man, that man name I can't pronounce. Understand? And Mickey, who basically negotiated some things. You understand? Everybody get negotiated. It was negotiated that, yo, Sydney could go to Miss World. She could wear the sash of Jamaica. She could represent Jamaica. But guess what? There was not going to be a pageant. So just get it. Like, that's it. That's basically how she was chosen. So she can't get it. She can't. She's Miss World. She's Miss Jamaica World. In practically, but not in theory, because there was no pageant that year, right? And she won't be sponsored by the government. She will not get any endorsement by the government at all. She depend on her own. She go, she depend on her own, and that's it. That is, like, that's all we're doing with her right now. Like, she depend on her own. And Oscar and Mikey had to go out and get private sponsorship for her. She got sponsored Airfare by Air Jamaica, and also Amars and Macmillan ad. They also lent a support in sponsoring her to go to, you know, Miss World competition. And as the story goes, you know, she end up going, you know, and end up winning. You understand? And yeah, she do her thing. You understand? And she did say that she never have any issues. She never really have any issues. I think, like, listening to her interview, she said the only issue she had was when, like, the whole Bob Marley thing, because at the time she was still dating Bob Marley, and the whole newspaper boy. Yeah, they did a run with it. They did a run with it. So I think that was an issue that happened. But she also did this interview in Nanfear magazine online, Nanfear publication. Let's go with that. And she said, this is what she said. She said, "I guess I was very lucky I came out on top because I don't know what to turn into Jamaica would have been like." You understand? And then she also went on to say that she was very saddened by the fact that, yo, there was no fanfare for her. Because, and I quote, "I flew into Montego Bay and then took a small plane to Kingston. There was no red carpet rolled out and crowds waiting to greet me." You understand? So that also posed an issue with her. You don't know. So it's like, but this is the thing. They don't tell her the ship. So they don't tell her, say, "Yo, listen, be not supporting you." Like, in theory, I support Jamaica. In theory, representing Jamaica, been a care, because we're still a stamp. Mali was very dead stamp. We're standing solidarity with South Africa here. Like, standing solidarity with South Africa. So, that's what happened. You know, that's the story. A very nice tale. And like, let me tell you what happened, the aftermath. So, you know, Sydney ended up winning. And you think that Sydney win and Mali removed the ban. Mali never, the ban never removed until 78. 1997. They were going to do the same thing that they did with Sydney, because Mali was not removing the ban, because South Africa was still doing the same thing, sending two persons to a black and a white contestant to Miss World. Also, as well, during that time, 1977 was the year that Steve Biko died. I don't know if anybody knows Steve Biko. Vibes Cartel fans, Steve Biko, me do the crime like Mandela for murder all of them like Steve Biko. That's the first time I ever heard Steve Biko. Vibes Cartel. You see that South Africa reference? Mandela do the crime like Mandela, murder them like Steve Biko. I mean, like, I could, every time I want to be a Vibes Cartel stan, I remember Gaza Kim, and I just can't. But every, like, the man is a genius, like a well-read genius, but Gaza Kim boy, she on the back of my head. Always can't be a stan. But yeah, so Steve Biko was he died in 1977, assassinated actually, and he was a member. He started the Black Consciousness Movement. He was a socialist in South Africa and very anti-apartheid. He was like one of the loudest voices, because I don't know, at that time Mandela was in prison, and Winnie was on lockdown, house arrest. So, you don't know, Steve Biko was there. And, yeah, like, see, he has this book called I Write What I Like, which is, like, a great, like, just go read it. Like, any book written by Steve Biko is great. Any book written about Steve Biko is great. There's also the testimony of Steve Biko, which is, like, his famous testimony. There's the movie that dramatized it by with that man, the American man. Abby, you know me at all. The guy from King Kong. The guy from Training Day. King Kong. Denzel Washington. Denzel Washington dramatized that. He has a line in there to say King Kong. King Kong don't have. I don't want to curse on the podcast, but yeah. That line. But yeah, he dramatized the testimony of Steve Biko, so you guys can like pre that. But my recommendation, I write What I Like by Steve Biko is a great book if you want to learn more about Steve Biko. And as I said before, there's numerous documentaries and biographies about him, so you guys can read that. But yeah, so that happened in 1977, right? And Manly headspace was just like, yo, Jamaica now represent. So when Mikey wanted to do the same thing that he did with Sydney, right, and sent just a representative with the Sash and Defiant sponsorship, that never worked out, because that year there was a lady named Sandra Kong. She was Miss Jamaica World. Like, there was no pageant still, she was giving it. But what happened was that Mali was like, nah, she cannot, we not do the same thing with Sydney. No, please remove her from the competition. She's not doing it. Like, the government basically said, we're not participating. Nope. So she never get a chance to participate. Understand? And yeah, so that was basically it. And then all the people, you know, everybody know the story. Sydney, things happen, you know, she ended up getting married to a politician. Yeah, she ended up getting married to a politician. Tom Tavares Finson, JLP people. He's a senator. Senator? Yeah. I don't know what he was. He's not an MP, but he's the Tavares Finson has had a long, the Tavares Finson name has had a long, from way back in the 1950s, had a long career in Jamaica politics. So he's in JLP. I just don't. Yeah, he's a senator. That's what I'm going with. He's a senator. And she ended up marrying him. They got divorced at some point. I don't know when. 1990s, 2000, at some point they got divorced. And, you know, Sydney's also the mother of Junior Gang. You don't know. Yeah, she had a child with Bob Marley. For persons who don't know. I think everybody knows this. Junior Gang. Which, you know, it's funny. Because if you listen to Half a Tree... No. If you listen to all of his albums, not Mr. Marley. Mr. Marley was very much more mellow. But Half a Tree and Welcome to Jamrock. I'm not going to put Stoney Hill in it because Stoney Billy's really like his biography. Wait, Stoney, I'm going to put Stoney in it? No, let's go with Half a Tree and Welcome to Jamrock. He basically a cost of politician, dog rotten, but he grew up with a politician. So, you know, it's one of those chuckleable moments. Chuckleable. Ha 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 ha. One of those chuckleable moments. But, messy. A mess. But yeah, all of that kind of happened to Sydney. And she's living her best life, you know. Bigger price of Sydney Briggs Spears, your contribution and making history in Jamaica, you know. As I said before, she paved the way for other Miss Worlds. There is Lisa Anna, who won in 1993, and most recently Tonian, who was doing 2 years of Miss World, because you don't know COVID and stuff. So yeah, Sydney, big up yourself. I don't know if I would have went through it in 76, to be honest with you, but I mean, you did and you won, and kudos to you. Manly, you don't know, in 1978, he got awarded one of the UN gold medals for a significant contribution in cooperation with the United Nations and in solidarity with the South African Liberation Movement in the international campaign against apartheid. And Manly was also chosen to speak on behalf of all the awardees. Nelson Mandela also kept a very close relationship with Michael Manley. You see, and everybody know the famous 1991 visit that Mandela when he came to Jamaica upon the invitation, because he literally only went to two Caribbean countries. He went to Jamaica and Cuba. He went to those two countries. So yeah, so he came here and stuff, and Michael Manley actually, when he retired. Yeah, Michael Manley, he became a Commonwealth observer to the mission of South Africa in 92 and 93, before heading the Commonwealth mission that observed their general election, which saw Nelson Mandela becoming the first black president of South Africa in 94. So Michael Manley had those close relationships. And, you know, the most famous one is that he is the first Jamaican, one of two Jamaicans, to receive the South African Order of Companion of Oliver Tambo. Oliver Tambo is one of the persons who work in ANC, the African National Congress. That was the opposition party to apartheid in South Africa. And he was also one of, like, a mobilizer, international mobilizer against the apartheid system. So that's Oliver Tambo. But yeah, Manley received that award for promoting the interests and aspirations of the Republic of South Africa. And it's the award is like a pristine thing. It's one of the highest awards that foreigners can get in South Africa. So you know, like, you have the Order of Nation in Jamaica, where it's for Jamaican nationals outside of Jamaica who have contributed greatly to the development of the country. The Order of the Companion of Oliver Tambo is similar. It's South African owned. So Michael Manley is one of two Jamaicans to have ever received that. The other Jamaican is also a former Prime Minister, PJ Patterson. Can I say before, PJ Patterson was Deputy Prime Minister. PJ Patterson also got the award, I think, back in 2012 or 2013. 2012. I'm just going to go with 2012 here. If I'm wrong, let me know. But I'm going to 2012. He got the award in 2012 for his stance against the anti-apartheid movement. And also his thing with reparations back in the 1990s. You see? Yeah, Mike Henry. Yeah, we're going to a joke. Before we even leave, there's this joke. Listen. So earlier this year, Mike Henry, the JLP minister, MP, who's like 106 now, I'm exaggerating, he's like 89, 88. he's probably not that old. We knew the next election, he's going to late 90. Like, he's going to go for Buster Man to record. Honestly, because Buster retired at 90. This man is going for that man record, clearly. But Mike Henry wrote this piece. It's the Gleaner Observer. I don't remember which one. Where he's saying that, yo, PJ Patterson OT or talk about reparation. And he never did nothing for reparation when he was prime minister. Like, he never said nothing about it. And everybody was like, what you mean? What? Wait, what? That was literally all the man did. No, like, that's literally all PJ talk about reparations. Like, my positive white world, England, it tell for your PJ talk about reparations. Because literally, the man tenor as prime minister, that's literally all the man spoke about. Reparations. I'm making you write this glorious piece. Oh my word. That's definitely one of the highlights of my that's definitely one of my highlights of 2020. I don't know why. You know, PJ is one of those persons who I hate, I don't talk about. Like Cliff Hughes, I learned you don't talk about those men in bad lights because they're afraid of people. So it's just so bizarre. The man doesn't like man believe all of us were from amnesia. I mean, I wasn't born during that period, but I know about it. Like, come on, no. Like, wait, no, yeah. I was born when Portia. No, yeah, I was born when PJ was prime minister. But still, like, oh my word, yeah. But yeah, Mike Henry, big up himself, yeah. Now I'm not gonna rough him up too tough. But yeah, that's our episode. Is in a lot of rants actually, but I hope you guys learned a lot, laughed a lot. We're officially back. Yeah, again with the Argentine footballers, if you guys know any black Argentine footballers, let me know, because I honestly don't know them. Like Lisa, like I said before, the man them literally put the black people at the front lines and kill all of them off in the country. But yeah, and hope you guys learned something new. You don't know if you know you want to give the podcast a shout out, you see, you can at tenement yard _ on Twitter, follow us. We're usually engaging, usually talk to people, answer any question that you guys may have. If you guys need resources on anything at all, any kind of resources, definitely at us. Starting out with DMs, ask. Can I start in my DMs at JTPGDavey, that's DAVEY. JTPGDAVEY is in, and just ask questions. I'm usually nice to people. And all the materials that we have asked, you don't know, you can just ask us where we get them, where we can source them, all of that. You see, if you want more books to read, want more Caribbean X books to read, I don't know, Rebel Woman Lit, understand, book club, the favorite, or the podcast favorite book club, you understand. You guys can also check them out, and they have a great podcast, like a real book club. So if you're interested to know the interconnectivity between like Caribbean history and Caribbean experiences and literature and poetry and just books overall, like, yo, Jereen and the crew over there are doing an amazing job. So you guys can go ahead and check them out. They're really great, really, really great book club, like one of the best. So yeah, but that's all I have to say today. Everybody be safe, don't know COVID running around, and yeah. Hope everybody learned something new, and we just don't know, as usual, we're just gonna end with Miss Jamaica. Big up on yourself.
Stunning. Yeah. Stunning. Man, yeah. Don't know you no baby. Still feel it for you like you feel it for me.
How you been doing so?
Yeah. Come back hard again. Me soja be your side, your smith, yeah. All you ever ask, a wine me can't see you. Me Saint Elizabeth say, I will not visit you. She know I'm on tour, but to take it as a disrespect. Miss Portland, yeah, she leave her son. She don't have a man already, but she want it done, man. Miss Saint Catherine, no nobody yatter than you. Body no beat up at her, that is why I'm flattering. Miss Trelawney, she never can stay. Now that is what I really call a runaway day, man. tea go bear. You have to check your one of them day. But the scammer them a move like some runaway slave. Miss Matt DeVoe, I can't stand the boat. But I guess the way you act is understandable. Feel like Freddie McGregor, I thought we was rocking steady. Just link me when you're ready, cause you're pretty but you're petty. Ooh, this goes out to each and everyone. The love doctor come back for give you the medicine. So anytime I'm stressing, you just come up on my cellular. You know you will never be disappointed.